And you're very welcome to the RTE Rugby Podcast. Delighted to be with you in a somewhat sobering week after that performance against England last weekend. We do have to talk a little bit about it, unfortunately, and we'll try not to dwell too much on the ins and outs of being hammered by England for 80 minutes at Twickenham. But I guess the wider question of where Ireland are going, what's next, and I get ahead of the Six Nations as well, what the plan might be to try and turn things around and what is going to be a short window of time. Delighted to say we have Donal Lenihan, Bernard Jackman and Wesley Willity with us on the podcast this week. Gents, you're all very welcome. I guess, Wes, you know, just to start off with your good self, like madness is, the definition of madness is trying to do the same thing over and over and expecting different results. For the fourth time in a row, Andy Farrell and Ireland went out, albeit twice under Joe Schmidt, but Andy Farrell was part of that team, went out against England to try and bash them up, and it failed miserably. And the most frustrating thing for me walking away from that match of the weekend was, what is it we are trying to do with this Ireland team?
Yeah, I'd agree. Actually, I don't know if I'd agree insofar as I don't know if they tried to bash them up. I don't know what exactly it was they were trying to do. And it's not to even have a pop in the sense of, I thought the effort levels were huge. I thought it was great bravery shown, like in the face of a almost brutal physical onslaught at times. Some of those defensive sets, particularly that England put in, were just like car crash stuff. But bar possibly as the game evolved a little bit in terms of trying to find some space in behind the defensive line with a kicking game, I didn't really see what it was we were trying to do. But I mean, maybe that's a product of the, it's very hard to try and implement anything when you're under that physical pressure. But yeah, it wasn't that it was hugely demoralizing in the sense if you go, oh, we're terrible necessarily, but it just seems they're just on a completely different level at the minute, which is a curious thing to say about an 18-7 loss away from home. But yeah, they just, like, their clarity of what they were trying to do, their unity of purpose, and their body language, the level of confidence and chat amongst themselves by comparison to ours, just operating on a different level, I think.
It does seem like that, Donal. I mean, I picked up the Sunday papers after we finished the match commentary and I read all the analysis pieces. I listened to yourself and Fiona and Birch on Monday night and Against the Head. I listened to Brian O'Driscoll on radio, Keith Wood, Andy Dunn, all of whom were asked the question and all of whom were trying to figure out what it was that Ireland are trying to do and what is the plan under Andy Farrell. And nobody seems to know, Donal. Nobody seems to have a clear idea of what this plan under this coach is.
Yeah, look, I mean, we've heard talk within the camp about a more relaxed regime, about trying to play more heads-up rugby. And I think, you know, the aspirations to do that are great. You know, you got the feedback after the World Cup when Rory Best's book came out and they talked about, you know, the Joe Schmidt regime being too regimented at the end, players not taking on enough responsibility. And it appears to me as if they're trying to flip from one extreme to the other. It's all very well, especially a lot of the players, a lot of players thrive on having everything laid out in front of them. Certain players, they know they're expected to do A, B, C and D, and they're quite happy to adhere to that system. It would appear as if Ireland at the moment are moving away from that, which I think is admirable, because you look at the best sides in the world and there's a bit of innovation there. There's a bit of instinctive reaction to what's happening in front of you. All the best teams, I think, are empowered by players who have the responsibility to make decisions on the field. I think Ireland are after falling somewhere in between that at the moment. But none of it matters. And again, we spoke about this on Against the Head, so I apologise in advance for repeating myself. But none of that matters if you don't have the fundamentals of your game right. You can talk about there's this aspiration about Ireland trying to, tweak the way that they attack. But if you're constantly on the back foot, if you're constantly of the opposition in your face, well, then you're going to be forced into error. You look at things like Ireland's kicking game and England's kicking game. Ireland kicked to relieve pressure. England kicked to apply pressure. And that really is you know, it's a simple thing. But every time you look at the likes of Hugo Keenan, who I thought stood up manfully, spilled one ball early on, didn't allow it to affect him. But every single time his front toe touched the ground, having fielded the ball, there was at least two England players smashing him into retreat. So therefore, everybody else is coming back. Everybody's on the back foot straight away. So unless you get the basis of your game and you give yourself a platform from which to play, it doesn't matter whether your game plan is scripted or, you know, whether there's scope for people to react to what's happening. And I think we're falling between two stools at the moment. It's an incremental challenge. I think you go back. Eddie Jones with England for the first 2 or 3 years of his coaching, when he took over, everything was about getting the basics of their game right. They have now achieved that and they're moved on to a different level. But I think we have to take a step backwards and address the basics of our game.
Right. Okay. On that, Bernard, like it's been flagged, you know, for weeks now that ahead of this England game, and even in the aftermath of the Six Nations game back in February, that this is what England are going to do. They kick to apply pressure, their set piece is deadly, and they strangle the life out of teams. We've known this was coming. Conversely as well, our lineout has been a shambles for the last few games, and it has not gotten any better, because it was as bad as I've ever seen it against England at the weekend as well. Allowing for the fact that they are very good as a lineout operator, but we couldn't even win our own throw most of the time. So we knew all these things were coming. We knew everything that was going to take place at that pitch at Twickenham was going to happen. And we still couldn't allow for it or plan for it. Or if there was a plan, it completely failed to materialise.
Yeah, and we probably fed into that fact that we got destroyed the lineup by not taking points and kicking to the corner and things like that, where we got disrupted. So we probably have ourselves to blame a little bit. I think that, look, it's not easy fix a set piece. It's not easy to get a set piece like England overnight. But the worrying thing for us is there's the same fault lines, you know, happening repeatedly, and we've become incredibly reliant on Tadhg Furlong to make sure that we have an okay scrum, which is crazy given how, you know, we're unbelievably fortunate and reliant on John Hayes, to Mike Ross, to Tadhg Furlong. And at some stage, you have to say, look at lads, we need to, you know, where's the depth chart here? Where's the player development pathway? Like, we can't rely on one player to be able to have a decent scrum. We just need to be better. And, like, there's some obvious, like, look at Andrew Porter, and people say, oh, he's not a tight head, but he's really a tight head. But there's obvious flaws in his pre-bind setup that don't seem to be getting fixed. Like, so there's areas that you would hope that could be fixed, that could maybe take away that lack of size and power that obviously England and France have over us. But
what's he doing, Birch? What's he doing? What have you noticed that he's doing?
Yeah, he's basically not controlling the loop. Like, Marco Bunipola actually, ironically, isn't a big scrummager. He's a very good player, but he wouldn't be seen as one of the best loose head props in the world from a scrummager point of view. Like, he's more than adequate. I'm not knocking him, but he, like, you know, as someone said to me, like, he would wish you played against Andrew every week at the moment, just based on how easy he's having it. And it's not just Andrew, it's a whole collective thing. He's having a big issue with his bind in terms of controlling the loose head's left arm. He's getting bullied a little bit there. And then, like, sometimes you get really poor footage of scrums, but against France and England, we got a couple nice overhead shots. And the amount of movement in the Ireland pack foot position pre-engagement is off the scales. But, you know, when you go back to the Greg Feek time, Ireland didn't have an aggressive scrum, and didn't have a scrum that won a lot of penalties, but we played off a huge percentage, and we very rarely got caught. And it was based around having, it sounds very simple, but the fundamentals of it was having 16 feet in the ground at the same time, good body position, clamped down rather nice. Than the movement and attacking and everyone doing their own thing. And effectively, that seems to have just drifted out of our game a little bit. And look, I'm sure a dominant tight head like Tadhg Furlong could paper over some of the technical flaws. But the reality is, you know, we need to back up to him. We need to have three tight heads that can come in and do a job. Plus, as a scrum, we need to be very much on the same page. And the problem with, and it's similar to lineouts, if you're not spending enough time working on these things, and Dolan was managing teams and played, and, like, you know, line out, goal kickers go off on their day off and practice goal kicking. You know, but forwards generally go off and practice, you know, line outs and drill and movement and timing, etc. And at the moment, England actually didn't have a good defensive line out in theory, but they made us look very average. But if you look at some of the movements and dummies and lifts and time and throws, we're just that half second off on a lot of it. And that's exposing that that area of weakness in a very magnified manner. So to get our attack right, we need to have better set piece, and that has to be the priority. And a word of warning, the Scotland pack in 2 weeks' time are not the Scotland pack that we bullied in Japan. And even we saw signs of that in February with Tadhg Furlong, where they won a couple of really important scrum penalties. So our litmus test is 2 weeks' time. And if we don't show improvement there, it's going to be hard to develop that attacking game.
Wes, what does that suggest to you? That suggests to me that, like, you know, just as a fundamental principle, Ireland are not putting enough time on the training ground into these basics and fundamentals of rugby to allow us to develop our game. So they're just not putting in the time to fix what is a glaring, openly obvious problems in our game.
I don't think it's up to an international coach to teach props or to scrummage either. I think that work is preferably long done at this point. Obviously, they're working on how they go about things. But I think what Bernard said about when you saw some of those angles that people are going off on their own kind of their own missions rather than there being that unity is kind of indicative of a few things. Like when you look at the first, like look at both of the tries in the first half the other day. The first one comes off an overthrow deep in the English 22, which Johnny May converts, obviously a great individual try in fairness to him. But, and then the second one comes off Peter O'Mahony going in from the side and giving away a penalty, which starts to lead to a, you know, succession of driving mauls and pressure, etc. But like, I'm sure it was so obvious, I'm sure Peter maybe feels hard done by that he was, you know, operating in some kind of grey area. But it, looking at it on the TV, it was bizarre to see someone go in that blatantly in a illegal position. But they're all kind of signs of a bit of a lack of being exactly buttoned up in your role in various facets of the pitch. And we're back to that old thing of, like, we were kind of bitching about, you know, detail and being too prescriptive and stuff.
Yeah.
Here's the flip side of that. And maybe there is a transition to go through to free you up, to allow you to play what's in front of you. Again, I never quite got that one. The guys that have been playing rugby for the most part since they were 5 or 6 years of age and have been come up through an entire professional system need to be told to play what's in front of them. They're all more than capable of doing that. Mm. But you're in this bizarre headspace where maybe you're overthinking things, but like you're kind of, you're trying to not be structured, but then you obviously need some structure. It's like you've gone down a rabbit hole here in terms of both analysing the games and maybe in terms of what you're trying to achieve as well, if that makes sense.
But do you think, I mean, we do have the players, right? I mean, we do have the players. I mean, I accept Bertrand's argument there that perhaps we need more depth in key positions, tight head being one of them, out half being one of them, perhaps scrum half being another. But do you accept that we generally, between the four provinces, that we have enough tools in our armory here to be better than what we're showing at the moment?
We've enough tools if we're very well coached. And I would imagine, and maybe it sounds hypocritical to say it now, but I would imagine Joe Schmidt got the absolute zenith of performance out of any set of players that were at his disposal.
Is that a fair comment, Donal? Is that a fair comment?
Yeah,
that we
have enough tools? I think Wes has hit the nail on the head there. You know, you look at Wales. We spoke about Wales last week and how they've regressed in terms of where they were 12 months ago. They were first in the world at a stage going into the World Cup. They were beaten by 3 points by the event winners South Africa in the semi-final. What's different to what they have now? They lost their coaching team. Gatland, Sean Edwards, Rob Holy, gone. So therefore, you have a new system, a new regime. They try to do something different. It takes time. The exact same with Ireland, and we've spoken about this in the past. Joe Schmidt came under a lot of pressure because of how anal Ireland were in terms of their setup and their attention to detail, but it worked. England, at the moment, despite the fact that they're on this fantastic winning run, that they were at the World Cup semi-final, the World Cup final, they destroyed New Zealand, who destroyed us the previous week in the World Cup semi-final. And the general comment in England, in rugby circles, is they're boring to watch. You know, they play a negative game. They rely on their defence. They're better off.
Have we heard that before?
Yeah, you know, so I mean, you know, you've got to be careful what you wish for.
And
it all comes down, Ireland at the moment, they remind me of a team, they're stressed every time they go into contact. They're stressed when they get into key areas on the field in relation to their lineout because of what is now building up to be an issue. Again, and against the head the other night, I think it was Birch just highlighted on the, you know, England took a ball, line out outside the 22, threw it to Joe Launchbury at two. Ireland had sort of conceded the front. They took it off the top, carried over the gain line. Three phases later, they have an attacking line out 7 or 8 metres out. You flip that on its side. I mean, Ireland played reasonably well at various stages. They actually played very well in the opening 15 minutes of the game. They had a couple of those grubbers in behind that stressed England. But when England scored those two tries within 4 minutes, it's as if a cloud came down over Ireland in the way they played. There was an example in the second half. We had a rock-solid scrum, flat ball to Bundy Aki, who gets over the advantage line, places the ball well, but England just managed to slow it down slightly. All of a sudden, Gibson Park is kind of caught in two-man's land. He's caught by Atosia at the base just when he's coming around the ruck. James Ryan comes in from the side, penalty against us. What happens? England, they tap, they go, they get they get a line out in about 30 metres out. James Ryan challenges for the ball against Mauro Atosia, but he pulls his hand. You look at the flip side, Atosia and Launchbury attacked the ball in the air and created bad ball on Irish throws. James Ryan pulls Atosia's hand. It's another penalty. So now they're within 10 metres of the line. There's, again, when I talk about the fundamentals of the game, the basic errors, like there isn't rocket science here. It's our mistakes that allowed England to get into the areas of the field where they punish it. And, you know, the sort of the more the pressure comes on, the more, like James Ryan is an outstanding player. He's a very intelligent player. I think Ireland conceded 12 penalties. James Ryan was guilty of 4 of those. When have we ever seen that before?
We haven't.
Now you wonder, is that a collective thing? Is it, you know, he's running the line out, he's now the captain. You could see the more he tried, the worse it got. And it happens. I mean, we've been there. But somehow you've got to strip things back and take that pressure from them to enable us to do, you know, at least to get the fundamentals right.
Yeah, well, and you know, Birch, poor old Ross Burns, everyone going to see the inside of Twickenham again for the rest of his life, given the experience he's had there so far. I texted this to you after the game, and because I know you're an NFL fan, and the whole prospect of how England were good defensively on Saturday, they were brilliant defensively, but they kept blitzing up, they kept charging up with us because they knew exactly what was coming, so therefore there was no risk to them employing this blitz defense. In the NFL, it's rarely used because you leave yourself exposed and vulnerable at the back if you get it wrong. But England knew what to expect time and time again. So there was no risk in them whatsoever charging up and knocking back our ball carriers. So there's clearly an issue in the Irish attack at the moment and the variety at which we are prepared to play.
Yeah, no, without a doubt. And I think, look, I feel a little sorry for Andy Farrell that, you know, he obviously was part of the last regime and the feedback from the senior players or whatever post World Cup was that the year going into World Cup became very intense and maybe players' heads were fried and, you know, there was too much detail, too much pressure, etc. So he's obviously taken that on board and he's gone about creating a fun environment to be in again. And like that's obviously important. I mean, he wants to have players who are enjoying their time in camp, and particularly now at the moment with COVID, with no release, you know, and they're in that bubble, it needs to be an enjoyable environment. And maybe he's decided that that's where he's going to start. And then obviously he's going to start to put in the detail and the strategy, etc. I would just say that, like, you know, at the end of the day, players obviously want to be in an enjoyable environment. But they'll also want to be able to win and achieve great things. And I think that'll be the problem. If for example, we don't start to add those layers of strategy where players can look maybe better than they are, because at the moment some of our players look worse than they are, right? And the great thing, what's important is to actually look so much better than you are because collectively everyone's on the same page. So, and that's not saying you can't play heads up rugby, but for things like line out, scrum, you know, discipline, you can't give fellas too much license to play heads up. You know what I mean? There's work and things that don't, and you need to pick the things that work pretty well. And you know, in a scrum, for example, it's about uniformity and a collective effort or whatever, and strict rules around what's allowed. So, but maybe Andy Farrell is going to start to add those layers for next year's Six Nations. In fairness to him, he has blooded players. He has tried to find new talent, which is great and always always difficult to do and win at the same time. And I would also say, just finally on this, is that I do think this is a golden generation for England and France. This group have yet to prove, this Ireland 2020 have yet to prove they're a golden generation. Like Murray, Sexton, O'Mahony, etc. have proved it over the last 10 years. But as a group, you know, I think the England group and the French group at the moment, in terms of their talent, France even a little bit younger, have shown an exceptional group. So there's a bit of growing to do there for us.
Yeah, there is.
I also think, just on that, you know, when we're talking about getting, I think was it Wes or Birch made the point that, look, Joe Schmidt got the absolute max out of what we had. Andy Farrell is operating at a different time. But also, look, we do have the four provinces that are doing reasonably well, but we only have so much strength and depth. And at the moment, Tyke Furlan obviously is a massive loss. But when you're talking about bench impact, you're looking at the likes of Dave Kilcoyne is out. Jack McGrath, for whatever reason, has seemed to have fallen off the radar. I'm not quite sure whether he's injured or whatever at the moment. But like, he's a huge loss. You had the scenario, like Andrew Porter, as a rugby player, is outstanding. And in prop terms, he is still very young and a lot of time to develop and grow. But to be fair to the guy, he was left on the field for 80 minutes. We actually had two tight heads on the bench when Ed Byrne cried off. You had Fiddley Beelam and John Ryan was brought in. Yeah. Now, Fiddley Beelam ended up covering Loosehead. John Ryan was also a Loosehead, as Porter was before he went to tight head. But, you know, you're asking a huge amount of a guy who's under that much pressure to then play for 80 minutes. Ian Henderson, I could understand why they started with Quinn Roo. I think Ian Henderson is a better overall rugby player. He's certainly more experienced. He has a more rounded game to him. He was on the bench. You know, Sexton wasn't there. Carberry has been out for so long. Robbie Henshaw, Gary Ringrose, Jordan Larmour. You know, we can't afford to have all of those players not involved when you're playing against the tier one sides, sorry, the top four teams in the world. Mm-hmm. So there is an element of that. But I welcome the fact that Farrell utilised the opportunity to expose those players against the very best, because, you know, I mean, Hugo Keenan will have learned so much more there than whoever is going to be the fullback against Georgia on Sunday. Do you know what I mean? We'll make a raft of changes and you know, you can't play four weekends on the bounce. But I often wonder, what are we going to learn in this game? Do you know what
nothing.
I mean?
Nothing. But isn't the test going to be against Scotland and how we perform against, as what Bernard has rightly said, is a much improved Scotland unit?
Absolutely. And, you know, but Scotland are a team who I think maybe when Townsend came in, he's making the mistakes that the Irish management are making now. They had this kind of, they were going to be the fastest team in the world. They were going to be the best passers in the world. They were going to play at the highest tempo. That's all very well, but if you can't have the ball, you can't do anything. Yeah. And they were being smashed and they were getting nowhere. So they have sort of reeled everything in. They've accepted the reality of what's happened in front of them. Steve Tandy, the former Ospreys coach who did a brilliant job in Australia, made a name for himself with the Waratahs as a defence coach. Townsend did a brilliant job in getting him to Scotland. I mean, when you look at where Wales are and, you know, Byron Hayward, the defensive coach, had to leave. The fact that they had one of their own in Tandy, who has done, has proved himself. But he's up in Scotland now. And Scotland have almost pared back, got back to the fundamentals. They now have a very good set piece. Their defence, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Birch, was up there, I think, as the tightest in the last six nations. They conceded the least number of plays. That's a huge change in where Scotland were. So I think Ireland could take lessons from that, in that, you know, Gregor Townsend is an idealist. He's flamboyant player. He was a brilliant player. He did a great job at Glasgow. They won a Pro 12 or 14 or whatever it was at the time, playing outstanding rugby. But it's very difficult. And Wayne Pivac is learning the exact same lesson in Wales. It's very difficult to take that and apply it to international rugby when you only have the players available to you to work with. in a very limited period of time compared to a club environment where you're working with players 5 days a week.
Okay, so Wes, look, give Andy Farrell some time. Just give him some time. Get the players back that we need back in position. Give him time to work with the best that we have. And I guess the litmus, and you know, the ultimate judgment will be how we do with next year's Six Nations, will it not?
Yeah, I mean, yes and no. I mean, just like I just go back to things both of the lads said there. I'd go along with Donal there that I thought Andrew Porter, for all the stick he's getting, his work rate was phenomenal the other day, and he really put himself about and showed for 80 minutes. Obviously, that should be a given, but I don't think it's fair that he's getting piled on all the time. I think Cian Healy, who's much more experienced, was under massive pressure, certainly in scrums early in the first half, which was surprising that Kyle Sinclair had him under that much pressure, I thought. But, like, I hear what Birch is saying about, you know, his first thing was to pare back the detail and get lads enjoying camp and all that. But I'm kind of going, like, you know, I see his post-match interviews with this kind of positive, measured, kind of knowing demeanour to it. And then you hear what the players say about, you know, the positivity and how much they're enjoying camp and everything. And, like, I kind of start going, like, is this just a PR thing? Like, I mean, what's the purpose here? Like, they'd no plan but to enjoy their rugby.
How could they be enjoying that, though? How could they be enjoying, like, you know, the England performance? How could they be enjoying, like, the Six Nations the way you finished up? That's not... Surely you're only enjoying rugby if you're winning rugby.
Birch did a piece there the other day about England's kicking game, and he highlighted how strong their kick chase was and how there's so many numbers right where the ball lands. And I'm kind of going, like, if Ireland are going out knowing they're going to kick the leather off the ball, surely having their kick chase right isn't that difficult and something that... the morale needs to be really good to facilitate this. Like, come on, like, you're starting to wonder what they're doing here.
Yeah, like. The scrum isn't Andrew Porter's fault. I'm just saying it's a collective thing. I'm just saying that we do need to find more tight head props, because no matter what good scrum you have, you need to have guys who are very, like, the best scrummers and tight heads at the moment in Ireland are Michael Bent.
I'm working on it, Birch.
And Marky Moore, I know, but that's the reality of it.
Hawaii, is it?
But I think as well, just wider discussion here, the problem for Andy Farrell and the Irish management is judging the next crop of players, because unfortunately, the sooner those four teams come in from South Africa come into the Pro 14, the better. So go back 4 or 5 years ago when we were, you know, always perennial thereabouts in terms of winning. European Cups. Our international team was able to beat England and France. You know, not every time, but a lot of the time. You know, and the English and French give out about Ireland and the model here, and basically saying it was like, basically, you know, Goldilocks and the porridge. It was just right. You know, they had enough hard game for the Pro 14. Yeah. They could rest players when they needed to.
It's always about the food with you, Birch.
Absolutely. Can't beat a bit of flanavan porridge. Product placement. No, but at the moment it's not just right. At the moment, our system isn't right. It's too easy, to be honest, for some of that's the problem. The reality is, we need, so the Munster young lads are doing great and they're getting, you know, they're putting in bonus points, and it's brilliant to see the Leinster team, Ulster, winning bonus points every weekend. But realistically, you know, you wouldn't mind seeing them being under a bit of pressure, because when you go to Twickenham, you're under pressure. When you go to Paris, you're under pressure.
Absolutely. And
that's just something that, look, it looks like it's going to be fixed, but at the moment, it's not a real ideal scenario for us.
But Bernard, if that's the case, then should the priority in camp not be to be under pressure rather than I'm really enjoying myself?
Yeah, maybe, for sure.
Yeah, I think it's a collection of a lot of things, really. It really must be an incredibly challenging environment because of COVID at the moment. You can't do the things that you normally can do. You know, you have players in bedrooms on their own. They're communicating through Zoom calls in the dressing rooms or through the various bedrooms and all that. It's very challenging from that point of view. But look, go back to the wider picture, and you know, you're all fantastic up there with your flapping progress. We're still on gruel down here in Munster. We want more. Please, sir, can we have some more? Like, we're hungry, we're starving.
Hey, but go on.
No, but like, you know, we spoke about it. The Pro 14, I think, in this phase of the Pro 14, the restart in October up to January, where you have this phase, it's a Pro 12 at the moment. It's going to become a Pro 16 in January. The sooner that happens, the better. I think the Irish provinces have played 25 games. They've won 23. As we know, Leinster and Ulster, 7 out of 7. Munster, 6 out of 6. I think, 19 winning bonus points out of the available 25. It's just too easy.
It's a waste of time, Dom. It's a complete waste of time.
Well, it's if we're in a holding mode at the moment. I was shocked when I heard some other former players talking on other platforms, talking about the four South African teams coming in wouldn't be good for the game. Jeez, I can't wait for them to come in. I can't wait to have the likes of the Stormers and the Bulls. Jeez, yeah. The provinces having to go to Loftus-Versfeld up in Pretoria. I tell you, it'll be a challenge there. Wait till you go to Ellis Park and the Lions are running at you on and off the park. I mean,
it's the equivalent of, people are giving out, but it's the equivalent of watching Dublin go out of Croke Park against Meath at the weekend, and it was over after 15 minutes. Nobody wants to see that. Nobody wants to see. The players don't want that.
No, it's very hard to watch. And the players aren't... it is given a platform where there are a lot of younger players coming through. But I think, in some respects, it's not a bad thing. Just looking at a Munster perspective, it's great to see so many, the Gavin Coombses of this world now making the breakthrough. Jack O'Sullivan was there the other night. Finian Witcherly looks as if he's gone up another level.
That lad Craig Casey has to get an Ireland cap within the next 3 or 4 months. Has to get an Ireland cap.
There's no question he will play for Ireland. It's a question of when. And we know that from the time he played with the Irish 20s. And I think he will, to be fair. But the problem for the Irish management at the moment is that these guys are playing at a level that is so distant from what they would expect against the top level of international rugby. You've got to feed them into that. And I think Farrell is he knows the game. He knows that there is talent out there. It's a question of getting the timing in relation to that. But I would say I'd be looking forward to seeing Craig Casey and Ben Healy having to go to Durban and play against the Sharks under the pressure there. That'll be a learning experience. Mm. Likewise for Harry Byrne with Leinster. So I do think the next stage of the season, and hopefully with the pandemic, it might make travel that little bit easier if the vaccine is available now in the new year. I can't wait for those games. And I think it'll bring on those players another a huge amount. I think there is help coming around the corner, but at the moment, the Pro 14 and its current guys, it's in a holding position. It will serve the younger players. It gives them a breathing space at the moment, and it's confidence. So therefore now, the likes of the players that we've mentioned, they are getting a lot of appearances. They're ticking a lot of boxes. And I think, but there is a realisation there that, the war is coming. The real battle is going to take place once those South African sides come into play.
Yeah. I came away from the World Cup in Japan. World Cup in Japan, being completely stunned by what I saw from the host nation in terms of the style of rugby that they implemented and the personnel that they had. And I was just so delighted to see a small team play such brilliant rugby and effective rugby as well with the wins and scalps that they took during the process. And I thought to myself, Jesus, this is what Ireland should be looking at. This is what we should be doing. We don't have the size, we don't have the power, but we have the personnel, we have the skill set, and we have the speed, and that's the way we should be playing rugby. Am I crazy?
Yeah. No, just on Dolan's point, it's not because, we want to see, massive teams and full of stars play against for Irish provinces. We do want to see a bit of that. But the actual player development, talent development model is that you give players a stage and phase where they're neutral, so they're the same as the opposition, where they're dominant, okay, and they're getting that every week in the Pro 14 now, but also a stage where they're stretched. And intermittently throughout when they're 18, 19, 20, 21, that they can't always be getting it all their own way. And at the moment, unfortunately, they're getting it all their own way. And that will change. And also from an Irish point of view, when you play against the Saracens, the Racings, etc., it's too big a step up too quickly. On your idea around could we play like Japan? No, I don't think we could, to be honest.
We not, really?
Yeah, Japan went into camp for, I think, 252 days of the year before that. Eddie Jones drilled them into an inch of their life 8 years for four years in the previous World Cup. They have their own domestic competition where they all play high tempo, high speed. I don't think we have that profile of players. But that's not saying we're not good players, but I think that all-out attack might be a stretch too far for us in the Northern Hemisphere with weather conditions, you know, different style of refereeing, a different opposition strength. But could we play a more attacking game? Yeah, for sure. And I think Ireland do want to play a more attacking game. And in the games where we've been dominant, Wales, Italy, we look like we can, but unfortunately when you come up against that brick wall of France, England, we've struggled.
Okay.
The other thing on Japan there, I mean, the preparation time that Birch is talking about there, you ally that, it was the perfect storm or the perfect conditions for them in Japan in terms of right throughout that pool stage, we were there. The humidity was just unbelievable. So therefore, they were able to stress teams by playing this high-tempo rugby. I mean, we used to do a piece to camera before the match down on the sideline.
And your fourth shirt of the day.
Yeah, exactly. But watching the teams warming up, I mean, Japan, that game in Shizuoka, Japan were warming up behind us and they were bouncing. They ran in behind us at the tunnel just finishing their warm-up. The Ireland players, there were like 26 Christy Moores after a fucking 3-hour gig in the O2 or something. Their sweat was just, they were drowned.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they had to go in, change everything and come out. So, I mean, fair dues to Japan. They maximised, they turned up. Very difficult, as England found out in 2015. When you're the host nation in a world event, it applies a different type of pressure. Japan maximised what they had to the inch, whether they do that. And that's why, really, I was hugely disappointed to see them not able to take them. They were invited first, if you remember, prior to Georgia, to play in the Nations Cup. I think it would have been fantastic to see them playing, to see if they could apply that type of pressure. I mean, they did it, to be fair, not quite to the same element in 2015, but they were good enough under Eddie Jones to beat South Africa. So look, I take what you're saying, but the conditions in Japan were absolutely tailor-made for the way they wanted to play.
Yeah, listen, whereas my pie-in-the-sky ideas is fucking usual, just being thrown out by the lads. Yeah. Just first suggestion. Don't even make a pass for a suggestion.
You just want to go back to Tokyo. You've got to get that out of your head, Hugh.
Listen, I'll be there for the Olympics, and I'm never coming back. I'm going to lose myself in Japan and throw my passport away.
Would you promise?
Yeah, hurry up about it.
Hurry up and go. Right. Look, on a more somber note, gents, we have to mark the sudden passing of Christophe Dominici, brilliant French winger over the years. Wes, I was looking at some of the highlights that went up on Twitter there of some of the tries he scored over the years, some crackers. Himself and Van St. Clerk very much in the same mould and wingers before him as well. Not the biggest, like the Shane Williams and stuff, but just the feet that he had, his awareness of where to be at the right time as well. And, you know, he was a tough little nugget for a small player, gone far too early and just very, very sad.
Yeah, very much so. I suppose everyone thinks of that 99 semi-final when they think of him. He probably, his best years were probably just prior to that and maybe a year or two after it. But at his very best, he was, you know, genuinely the epitome of all that we loved about French attacking rugby at the time. And I remember at the time there was he kind of became a superstar in France on the back of that tournament and maybe struggled to adjust to that as well. And just very, very sad, really.
Yeah, he would have been a bit legend in France, Birch. Obviously, he was there for a good few years and just very sad. I was very shocked when I got a text the other day to hear that news. Very shocking news.
Yeah, and he was trying to get back into the game. He'd been out of the game, doing some punditry stuff, but he headed up a consortium that were supposed to buy Béziers Pro D2, and it was really, it was really highly speculated upon in the media. He did a lot of interviews. He met the fans. He was talking to people like Michael Cech had to come in as coach and talking about bringing in some money from an investor from Dubai to buy this club, a small town club, but a club with a huge history. And unfortunately, at the last minute, the deal fell through. So apparently, that was a huge setback to him, and he struggled with his mental health since then, obviously, and it's very sad. I saw Rafael Ibanez and some of the other players talking about him this morning, doing an interview this morning, and just said, like, he epitomised French flair and was a great friend of theirs on and off the field. And, yeah, it's tragic.
Desperate. Yeah, it just really is. Very, very sad news. Okay, gents, just before we go, I want to put this point to you because it's just coming in. And Mikey has just sent it up on our little WhatsApp group here. This is, Wes, maybe you can pick this up. This is Chris Ashton, former England winger, of course, the big swan diving lad that he was, talking about James Lowe, criticising, saying he's too big, he's too heavy, and he's too slow. So basically, he doesn't rate him whatsoever. What do you have to make about that as a Munster man who's fond of taking anything you can to chip off James Lowe? Do you think he's right?
No, I don't think he's slow. I don't think he's that big. He wasn't impressive the other day, but it was hard to be in what was going on. Having said that, the other winger for Ireland was Keith Earls, put in a phenomenal individual performance, but that's for another day. No, I wouldn't agree at all. I don't know where he's coming from. He obviously hasn't watched much of Lowe playing for Leinster over the last couple of years.
Yeah, fair enough. All right, on that bombshell, gents, we'll leave it. My thanks to Donald, to Wes, and to Bernard. We'll be back next week to review the Georgia game and look ahead to what we presume is going to be Scotland in the final round of the Autumn Nations Cup. Until then, mind yourselves.